Welcome to the Swing Set. Climb on up. There's always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore open relationships and swinging, the pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of swinging in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hand down your pants. Ooh, sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own lives on the swing set. Thanks for swinging by.
The following podcast is intended for listeners over the age of 18. It contains mature subjects and adult discussion. Listener discretion is advised. As we are not doctors or psychologists, all advice is for novelty purposes only. All advice and discussion comes from our own personal experiences. Yours may well be different. Hello and welcome to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. This is week two of our interview with Christopher Ryan, author of Sex at Dawn, the book that challenges the notion that we were all predestined through our ancestry, genes, and evolution to be monogamous. I'm Cooper Beckett, and with me today is...
Hi, I'm the professor.
This is Shira B. Katz.
We are all here with Christopher Ryan. One note before we start, somewhere early on in this episode, poor Ginger was knocked off the internet by a dying cable box. And while this did allow her to get a nice visit from a sexy cable installer, it unfortunately removed her from the rest of the Christopher Ryan interview. Without further ado, now on to the show. I've noticed a lot of people in their day-to-day lives, and I was like this before I found non-monogamy and open relationships, we're looking for the, you know, everyone wants to be, quote, normal. And we feel like our urges often are abnormal. So being told in a book or by a friend, you know what, you're not abnormal if you want this. You're not bad if you want this. It is so incredibly freeing, you know. And I really latched on to a quote you have from Carl Jung in here. The prerequisite for a good marriage, it seems to me, is the license to be unfaithful. And I was talking to a friend about this who, you know, as soon as I talk about being a swinger with some people, they immediately say, "Ah, it's probably not for us." It's like, okay, well, that's fine. That's not what I'm talking about. I want you to acknowledge, to look at your relationship and be open to potential, not to swinging, but to potential, because we have this idea in society that, like, adultery is the nuclear, option. If you commit adultery, chances are when that becomes known to your partner, that's it. And taking that as a nuclear option out and instead looking at it as a symptom of a problem that can be fixed, that's really the far more positive way to spin it. And if you look at it like a problem that can be fixed and examine where the interest lies and what the issues were, then people would be a lot healthier in their marriages.
Cooper, it strikes me that one of the things that's happened, at least in the last couple of years here in the States, is we've put a label on what you just described as a positive. We've put a very negative label, in fact, a disease. We call it sexual addiction. And somehow this has become the disease du jour for what Christopher describes in the book as not only being natural, but evolutionary as being an imperative. Christopher, I'm interested in how you think of this sexual addiction, you know, label that's thrown around, and how those of us, as Cooper just described well, those of us who choose to redefine our relationships into more positive framework, how we avoid being labeled as sexual addicts by friends and neighbors.
yeah. I don't know if you remember, we talk about drapetomania in the book, which was the disease of slaves who wanted mm-hmm. to run away from the plantation.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Right.
Yeah. Sex addiction to me in most cases is drapetomania, similar to attention deficit disorder in kids. Now, I don't know, I read recently, what is it, a third of all boys in schools in the U.S. are getting Ritalin these days. Now, I'm not denying that there are kids who have a serious problem that a dose of Ritalin might help with. And I'm also not denying that there are people who are obsessively, obsessive masturbators, let's say. They can't stop masturbating long enough to go to work, or they're masturbating in their cubicle at work, or they're, okay, that's a problem. But it's not a sex problem. It's a problem with right. obsession. It's an addictive, right. Just like alcoholism, as far as I'm concerned, isn't about alcohol. It's about you. It's about an addictive and emptiness in your life that you're trying to fill with alcohol. So if it's not the alcohol, then it'll be cigarettes or donuts or jerking off or whatever.
Right.
I agree with the professor, when you say that sex addiction is just another label. It's just another way of calling someone a pervert or a whore or a slut or, whatever. Mm-hmm. Except this one sort of sounds more medical and is gender neutral, I guess. So, you can throw it around without worrying about offending anyone. I see it as just another example of a frightened society, calling free people names, which is what they do.
So how do we, us poor people over here in America, start to affect change?
Well, I think you're already doing it. The fact that you obviously have a public forum where you're talking about these issues intelligently and openly is hugely important. And it's sort of, the way these movements always start. I'm generally kind of a negative as far as historical trends go. I'm not a big believer in, yes, we can and all that stuff, because yes, we can, but normally we don't, but I have to say that as far as sexual politics goes in the U.S., it really looks to me that American culture is at a tipping point. And it's not surprising to me that the drug issue and the sex issue seem to be happening at the same time. You've got all this agitation for gay marriage at the same time that you've got agitation and sort of inroads in legalizing marijuana and soft drugs and so on. I think that what's happening is that the United States is in a state of collapse economically and in terms of the American dream. Nobody really buys it anymore. And the upside of that, the lining, the silver lining in that cloud, is that people are turning their attention to more important things. And so you even have, Pat Robertson a couple days ago coming out saying, he thinks it's a bad idea to be sending people to prison for marijuana. I mean, who would have thought 6 months ago that Pat Robertson would come out in favor of decriminalizing marijuana?
Right.
Insane. So I think that change is coming very quickly. And I think the more pressure that people like you and us, I guess, can lend, more add our weight to this momentum, it really feels like the walls starting to crack, and we can have a big breakthrough here. And I think it's great that a lot of this is, I think all the sort of alternative sexual communities really have a vested interest in helping any of them. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Swingers should really be helping push for gay rights and gay marriage and the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is a great moment for American culture. And conversely, you know, gay rights should be helping the swingers and, you know, get their recognition from the society. And I think that's happening, sort of the way, you know, Jews and blacks helped each other in the civil rights movement. I think it's similar to that.
So you're saying there's hope for us. We might be able to turn this around.
Oh, well, yeah, there's hope. I still spinning, you know, what was the expression? Spinning around the drain, you know. It's a pretty dismal moment historically. So where are you guys?
We're spread all over.
Yeah, actually, we cover the entire United States. We have Shira is from San Francisco. My wife and I are from Chicago, and Ginger and the professor are from New England.
And we find it fascinating. You were talking earlier about, you know, having a lot of Northeast or at least Mid-Atlantic roots. Ginger and I recently went to Atlanta and went to one of the clubs down there. Within the South, it's just so ironic, I find, that they have these very large swinger clubs. We've also heard of, you know, certainly Atlanta, Dallas, Florida, where, you know, conservatively speaking, there is just so many more folks from the religious right, people who are just morally more conservative, yet they seem to have the bigger clubs, whereas in the Northeast, they're almost non-existent.
Really?
Yeah,
it's interesting that swinging doesn't really seem to align with liberal politics, does it?
That is well said.
Yeah, when we were in Vegas, I was amazed at how many sort of the profile of the swinging couple is not at all what most people would expect. You know, there were so many very conservative, Republican types that you wouldn't think would be into it. But in fact, when I was in Seattle last month, I met this amazing couple. They were, I guess they're in their 40s now. And I spoke at a polyamory conference in Seattle, and they were there at the conference. And they had been very conservative Christians their whole lives, raised in that community, and followed it right into their early 40s.
Yeah.
And they had a crisis in their relationship. You know, their marriage was falling apart and everything was just sort of collapsing. And I guess, I don't remember the details, but essentially they just sat down and said, okay, we have to talk about this. What do we really want? What do we really believe? And they had this epiphany together in their mid-40s when they realized that neither one of them really believed all this dogma that had been fed their entire lives.
Oh, wow.
And that they really loved each other as people and they wanted to stay together, but that the sexual spark was completely gone from their marriage and they both wanted to be with other people and they were both okay with it. And so they sort of got in touch with the polyamory movement and the swinging community, and they sort of, when I met them, they'd been like maybe 2 or 3 years into this and they were like reborn.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
You know, this is a small world story. We met the very same couple you're referencing last year at Desire.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I won't disclose who they are, but I know exactly who you're talking about. In fact, we had heard from them after they met you at the Seattle event because both of them were so excited to share their story with you and visit with you. And with any luck, we'll see them again next year at Desire because she has, in the last several years, become an amazing pole dancer.
Yeah.
Really worth watching. It's fantastic.
Yeah, she sent me some photos of the dancing.
Oh, did you see the one that she called the professor?
Oh, one of the moves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that
That's me.
That's amazing. Yeah, you know, it's funny there. I mean, not funny, but sort of poignant that when I met them, their big concern was that their kids were having a real hard time dealing with them.
Yeah, because they had been raised in that culture and still held on to much of those beliefs. I think, you know, those transitions in our life become very difficult, no different than when you grow up in an area or move to an area and you have a certain community that develops. People continue to evolve, and to the extent that you evolve in, you know, what still is considered to be non-traditional fashions, you alienate yourself from many of, you know, those relationships. Family are difficult, friends certainly. Again, I think it's great that there is now, you know, in some ways, an objective third party, you know, somebody who isn't trying to coercively, you know, bring people into the lifestyle, just saying, you know, the facts are, this is, you know, this is really, as you said, much more related to who we are from an evolutionary perspective than, you know, sowing our oats or trying to be hedonistic just for the sake of being hedonistic.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you said that, because one of the most frequent criticisms that we get about the book is people complaining that we didn't include enough prescriptive material, you know, that we should be telling you what to do now.
Like how to.
Yeah, exactly. And
well, you can always refer them to Life on the Swing Set. There's plenty of how to.
We are happy to help people learn to express themselves sexually with us. Wait a minute. Good. No, in general.
Yeah.
General. And, you know, taking what was just said, it kind of adds on to what I was saying earlier, is that you get this idea of how you're supposed to behave. My wife and I both wanted to fuck other people. We got it married young. We were in a long-term monogamous relationship. We had very little experience outside of our marriage, and we really wanted to fuck other people. But rather than admit this to each other, we just sort of held on to it and spiraled downward, 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 downward to discussions of divorce. When suddenly we admitted this to each other and said, well, I think there is something we can do about that. And then we found the swinging community. And now 2 years later, we're happier than we've ever been.
Yeah, that's fantastic. The thing that's so important about that, from my perspective anyway, is that all we're doing is bringing our lives into alignment with our evolved biology. Mm. You know, it's no different from, you know, noticing that you don't have enough vitamin D in your diet, so you eat more vegetables that have vitamin D, and suddenly you feel much better. To me, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And we're not getting a certain kind of nutrition, you know, in sexual erotic nutrition. And once you add it, then, like we said earlier, it's no longer a problem. It's no longer an issue.
That's a diet we should all be on. Sure.
There's a Pali term called compersion. Have you heard compersion?
Yeah.
And it's deriving pleasure from your partner's pleasure. And I would think that this also strikes as an evolutionary thing, because if you can get to the point where you're deriving pleasure simply from your partner having pleasure, then everybody's happier.
Yeah, I think the only thing that interferes with that is, you know, insecurity, which gets us back to the scarcity-based emotional market that we live in. You know, if your partner's pleasure is not inherently threatening to you, then there's no reason that you wouldn't feel that sympathetic pleasure. You know, and in fact, there's a lot of erotic energy around it. If you know, if we can assume that you find your partner to be very attractive, then seeing your partner in a sexual situation is going to be gratifying, you know, just by definition. There's There's a song I always think of when I'm talking about this. It's called It Is What It Is and That's All. It's a very deep song, but he says, at one point he says, Steve Forbert is the singer. He says, driving a Jaguar is impressive, but you can't watch it go by.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, and the Manhattan skyline is a sight to behold, but probably best through New Jersey-based eyes. So, yeah, I mean, if...
So you're seeing this someone you're really attracted to and interested in. You're seeing them through the fresh perspective. You're also gaining new ideas on how to pleasure them yourself, which is a benefit always. And it's got the selfish thing to it where, hey, that guy finds her attractive, and you know what? She finds me attractive, and she's coming home with me.
Sure, sure. There's all that, and you know, and then there's also, and let's face it, there's something incredibly erotic about, and not just erotic, beyond erotic, actually, about seeing your partner, watching your partner have sex with someone else. But when she looks in your eyes, you know she's really with you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's so far beyond sex. And it's something that so few people get to share that, you know, it's sort of a tragedy that more people don't experience that, I think.
The Swing Set's got to take a quick break. Don't go away. Get ready, Swing Setters. We are firing up another Life on the Swing Set sex toy contest. When was the last time you fell in love with a vibrator? Well, let me tell you, every time Marilyn picks up her Lilo Ina, she falls in love all over again. Lilo's twist on the classic rabbit allows you to have two independent vibrators, one on your clit and one on your G-spot. It's made out of incredibly soft silicone and has the widest variety of speed and pulse settings we have ever encountered. While many vibrators say they're whisper quiet, this one actually is. So how can you get this amazing vibrator? Well, let me tell you. All you have to do is give us a call and leave us a sexy message that gets us hot and bothered. It can be an orgasm, a sexy story, whatever your heart and loins desire. So give us a call at 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. And be a little naughty on our voicemail for your chance to win the fabulous Lilo Ina. Welcome back to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. We are here with Christopher Ryan, author of Sex at Dawn. I want to switch gears a little bit here to talk about the Mosu people. Is that how you pronounce?
Well, I think it's Mosuo.
Mosuo. At Lugu Lake. I found this fascinating, and because it felt to me like the government's attempt. Now, this is the Chinese government that attempted to disseminate the propaganda and eliminate their sexuality. So the Mosuo people have a very open sexuality society that's a matriarchal society. And the Chinese government came in, saw this, and tried to discourage it. That wasn't working. So then they started making propaganda films about sexually transmitted diseases to, again, try to discourage it. And it struck me as like a Marx Brothers film, the government trying these ridiculous attempts to intervene in a society that really needs no intervention, and how amazing it is that they continue to live in this little utopia of open sexuality and free sexuality. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it sort of relates to what we were talking about earlier with sexual addiction and, you know, the names that we call people who diverge from our sense of what's normal. Unfortunately, what's happening now with the Mosuo is that they're being overrun by Han Chinese who think that all the women are whores.
Oh.
And so, you know, they have all these bus trips, you know, and, you know, hundreds of Han Chinese men will go up there on buses and think that they can just have sex with any woman they want. And so what the government wasn't able to destroy tourism is unfortunately having a lot of damage, causing a lot of damage to right now.
Oh, that's such a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've been, as we say in the book, they've been there for thousands of years. The first account in the Western world is from Marco Polo, who went through their area and found them very welcoming in his visit. But yeah, it's an example. What's very interesting from an evolutionary perspective is that the Mosuo are a sort of devastating counterexample to the standard evolutionary notion that no man could possibly be unconcerned with paternity.
Right.
You know, and here's an example of a society in which paternity is determined, is defined as being the brother of the mother, and your biological involvement in fertilization has nothing at all to do with your paternity.
You know, we're going to encourage as many people as possible to read Sex at Dawn. And I think we all have been encouraging as many people as possible to read it. But if there was one fundamental idea you wanted to get across that we could get across to people who aren't going to read it, because no matter how hard we push, some people just aren't going to read it, what would that idea be?
That's a very good question. I would say the idea is that in order to understand any animal, including human beings, we need to observe that animal in context, in its natural context. And the natural context of human beings, in terms of primatology, would be to look at human beings beside chimps and bonobos. In terms of our anthropological context, it would be to look at human beings in pre-agricultural hunter-gatherer societies.
Mm-hmm.
So the central idea that I would love to communicate to as many people as possible is that to understand themselves, they need to look at Homo sapiens in the proper context. And when they do that, they'll see that what they're told we are is very different from what we actually are. And everyone knows what we are. They feel it. We feel it inside. And so all the conflict, a lot of the conflict that we feel between what we know we are and what we're told we are, can be resolved through knowledge.
So, Christopher Ryan, Do you suspect that you have a second book in you that would follow up this idea a little bit more, perhaps studying the current day polyamorous and non-monogamous communities?
Possibly. You know, the idea we had, what happened was when we first pitched this book a few years ago, there was this sudden storm of interest. I probably spoke to 30 different editors about the book. But what most of them wanted was a prescriptive book. And I remember one editor from Penguin saying to me in our phone call, like after 10 minutes or something, he said, okay, let's just say you're right about this evolutionary argument and yada, yada, yada. What's that mean? What's it mean for my marriage? What's it mean for work? What's it for school? For, you know, what's the application of this? And I said to him, you know, I don't want to write about the application. I want to write about the science, because why should anyone care what I think if I can't demonstrate that I'm right? You know? I mean, I'm not famous. I don't teach at Harvard. There's no inherent reason anyone should give a damn what I have to say about anything. So I have to present an argument that people can judge independently. So he wasn't interested in that, so that's why we didn't publish it. But so as I was writing the book, I thought, you know, I sort of assumed that the follow-up would be something more prescriptive, but the more Casilda and I talk about it, the less willing we are to write a prescriptive book, because let's face it, you know, everyone's a universe, right? I mean, every person is a world, and two people together is a universe. It's constantly changing, and any relationship. And if you get into a polyamorous situation, my God, everything gets more complicated exponentially, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're very hesitant. In fact, we kind of feel that there's something insulting about telling people what to do or how to do things, because it's also individual.
That's completely fair. One of the things that you'll notice in most non-monogamous communities is that, you know, we generally will say that there are no sweeping generalizations, really. And like just now, like I'm saying, that's probably not even true. But the major thought is that there's no one rule or one prescription out there for everyone. That said, since you're not going to be writing a follow-up prescription, do you think that you'll follow up Sex at Dawn with another book?
Yeah, I'm working on a proposal now for another book, but it's not primarily about sex. It's I presented two ideas to editors. I was in New York a couple of weeks ago and met with a bunch of editors. And the two ideas, the first idea that I thought would be that everyone would jump on because it's sort of a natural follow-up to Sex at Dawn was going to be to try to finesse the prescriptive question by not telling anyone what to do, but by presenting sort of a range of ways that people have dealt with the conflict between, on the one side, wanting to have a long-term, stable family relationship, but on the other side, also wanting some sexual novelty in their lives. So we would, you know, interview a polyamorous family, and then we would, you know, go to a swingers party with our clipboards and do that. and the idea was to sort of make it global. So we'd also talk to a French couple that have a don't ask, don't tell situation, and maybe a Japanese, and go to a village in Africa and, you know, talk to his people there. And I thought they would jump at that, but they weren't really very interested in that.
Really?
And instead they were interested in my other idea, which is another big idea book, which is more of we talked earlier about the middle section of the book that's not primarily about sex, but is more about economics and war and diet and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's sort of an amplification of that material. So it's sort of bringing a prehistoric perspective to modern life and looking at why so many aspects of our lives are dysfunctional in terms of how we've diverged from our prehistoric nature. So that's what I'm working on. And there'll definitely be a section on sexuality in there, but it won't be the focus of the book.
Still sounds fascinating. I mean, that middle section that you referenced was probably some of the more enriching and some of the parts that really stuck with me to learn how these things kind of apply to everyday life is, and not just sex, is it really kind of changes the way that you look at the world around you. That said, Christopher, well, do you have any upcoming events or anywhere where people can see you speak?
One of the things I'm going to try to do in the new year is hook up with some lecture agents and see if they can set up a lecture tour. At this point, I'm probably looking at September to do a major tour in the States. And what I'd like to do is sort of have it associated with speaking at a lot of universities. Because I think it's really important to get this message out to as many young people as possible.
So yeah, hit them while they're young.
young. And you know, before, you know, Cooper, you were talking earlier about, you know, how traumatic it is when you're already in a long-term relationship to sort of make this shift, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, and you're lucky. You're married to a woman who sees things the same way you do, but how many people aren't?
Most of our swinger friends have had the situation where they were married and not sexually compatible, and basically their marriage fell apart until they found someone sexually compatible. And my wife and I consider ourselves very lucky that the people we found that were sexually compatible were us once we figured this out.
Right.
You know, we allowed ourselves to be open when society has basically told you that, you know, there is no real reason why you should ever be interested in anyone else. You know, everything we look at tells us that you shouldn't be interested in anyone else if you're really in love.
Right.
And that's a hard thing to overcome. And it is, like you said, it was traumatic because for the longest time, I tried really hard not to be interested in anyone else.
Yeah.
And really what I think the world at large needs is, well, essentially an enema, to be told, you know, that, you know, it's okay to be interested in other people. It is okay.
It's not just okay. It's completely unavoidable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, anyway, as far as speaking events, there's nothing planned right now, but, I hope that, I'll be able to set something up. I'd love to do a speaking tour in the spring and then another one in the fall. When I was in the States in October, I ended up doing a speaking tour that was just completely spontaneous. I didn't really arrange anything. I just kept getting invitations and things fell together and it was fantastic. Everywhere I spoke was sold out, standing room only. It was amazing. I mean, in Chicago, I spoke at the University of Chicago and, there were about 200 people in the room that they couldn't, there was no space for anyone else.
That's fantastic.
You are speaking, something that a lot of people want to hear. And
yeah, well, you know, that's in Chicago. What happened was it was so full that nobody else could come in. So they opened the windows in the back of the room so people could stand outside in the in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
Under their umbrellas and listen through the window.
Man,
it was unbelievable. And, you know, this gets us back to the state of publishing these days, because, you know, I kept telling our editor, like, why don't you send me on a speaking tour? You know, I'll, it's free. You know, I've got experience. I've spoken at conferences all over the world. I enjoy it. You know, let's do it. No, it's not worth it. Nobody ever shows up. It's just depressing. And he said, you know, last week I went to a bookstore event and three people were there. It was so depressing. And I said to him, but dude, the book wasn't about sex. It wasn't an author who loves speaking publicly. Yeah. And it wasn't being plugged in a nationally syndicated sex advice column by Dan Savage.
Absolutely.
Because Dan Savage said, man, if you set up a speaking tour, I'll plug every event in my column.
Well,
and
that would do
that to our publisher, thinking they would jump all over it. They weren't interested.
You know, I would think that you'd be able to hook up with Dan Savage and kind of tour with him. He speaks very often at universities and does his own little tours.
Yeah, no, I when I was in Seattle, I stayed in Dan's basement for a couple of nights.
Oh, what's
that like?
That must have been amazing. I could only imagine.
You know, I have to say it's a basement like anyone else's.
Although, so disillusioning.
Although there is a huge mirror by the bed, I have to say.
Well, Christopher Ryan, I want to say on behalf of the swing set and on behalf of poor Ginger who got knocked off the call and couldn't get back on.
Oh, she's going to be heartbroken.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning and just, you know, for doing what you are doing for non-monogamy and, you know, transparency in sexual desire. And because God knows we need that kind of transparency. You know, we see things like our friend Kendra Holliday, who I know has communicated with you through her website, The Beautiful Kind, coming out and just being, you know, lambasted by her entire community for being open sexually. And it's just a tragedy sometimes how we refuse to allow that this thing that we all want, sex, is something natural to want, something okay to want. And I'm very proud of myself for not bringing up religion this entire discussion, because I have some very strong thoughts on why we don't believe this is okay to want.
Cooper, this is the professor. I just want to also...
Oh, professor's back.
I am back. Thank you. I so also say thank you. And I won't assign any nefarious motives for Ginger. However, she does really like a concept called intellectual foreplay. And with the quality of the conversation, I'm wondering if she just literally could not take it any longer.
That wouldn't surprise me with her.
And was in as we speak, just you know, orgasming over and over and over and over again.
Well, if that's the case, tell her to call me back later.
So thank you again, and good luck with everything. When is the paperback out yet, or is that planned?
Paperback comes out beginning of July, like the 3rd of July, I think.
There are some fantastic deals on Amazon. Please go buy this book however you need to, because the information in it is fascinating and comforting, which is the best kind of book for non-monogamous people.
Thanks. People can go to our website as well, where there are excerpts from the book. So they can read a couple of chapters and check it out and make sure they want to plunk down $17 for it or whatever it costs these days.
And what is that website?
It's sexatdawn.com.
And they can also follow you on Twitter, at sexatdawn.
Exactly, Sex at Dawn, and Facebook as well. We have a book page at Facebook.
So everybody in the Swing Set community, please spread the word. Well, thank you as always for listening to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. If you want to contact us on Facebook, we are at facebook.com/theswingset. You can follow us on Twitter at Swing Set Life, or email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com. As always, you can give us a call at 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. And remember, as we said at the break, if you call and leave us a sexy message that gets us all hot and bothered, you have a chance to win a lovely Lilo vibrator. So if that's not incentive, I don't know what is. I've been Cooper Beckett, and a special thanks to Christopher Ryan, author of Sex at Dawn. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks when we have the amazing Tristan Taramino on the show to talk to us about anal sex, bisexuality, porn, and all sorts of other things. We cannot wait. Thank you all for swinging by.